January 17 slasher captured. The police were out to get him, and one of them got an unterrifying looking little fellow, named Dowd. It was said that he had been caught, stabbing a man. In the mixture of all situations, it is impossible to be unable to pick out grounds for reasonably believing, or disbelieving, anything. Say that it is our preference to believe or to accept that it was not the marvelously disappearing slasher who was caught, but somebody else who would do just as well. Then we note that, 20 minutes earlier, another policeman had caught a man, who had, this policeman said, seized somebody, and was about to stab him. Or June, 1899, and two men were out to catch the kissing bug and one of them caught a beetle, and the other nabbed a butterfly. The policeman of the first arrest was ignored, the captor of Dowd was made a roundsman. Dowd pleaded not guilty. He said that he had had nothing to do with the other assaults, and had drawn a knife only in this one case, which had been a quarrel. His lawyer pleaded not guilty, but insane. He was found insane, and was sent to the Asylum for Insane Criminals, at Auburn, NY. The outrages in New York stopped. Brooklyn Eagle, March 12, 1892. Dispatch from Vienna, Austria. The city continues to be shocked by mysterious murders. The latest victim is Leopold Buchinger, who was stabbed to the heart by an undetected assassin, in one of the most public places in Vienna. This makes the list of such tragedies five in number, and there is a growing feeling of terror among the public. Say that it's an old castle, hidden away in a Balkan forest, and somebody was wounded, at night but, as if lulled by a vampire's wings, felt no pain. This would be only an ordinarily incredible story. In November, 1901, a woman told a policeman, of Kiel, Germany, that, while walking in a street in Kiel, she learned that she had been unaccountably wounded. She had felt no pain. She could not explain. The police probably explained. If a doctor was consulted, he probably explained learnedly. Another woman about 30 women curious and inexplicable attacks. Then men were similarly injured. About 80 persons, openly, in the streets, were stabbed by an uncatchable and invisible, or it may be the most fitting description to say that, upon the bodies of people of Kiel, wounds appeared. See the London Daily Mail, December 7, 1901. The extraordinary thing about the mystery is that some marvelously sharp instrument must have been used, because the victims do not seem to know that they are wounded, until several minutes after an attack. And yet I think that something of an explanation of these jacks is findable in every male's recollections of his own boyhood. The ringing of doorbells, just to torment people stretching a string over sidewalks, to knock off hats, other pestiferous tricks. It is not only just for fun, there is an engagement of the imagination in these pranks. It will be my expression that, when the more powerful and more definite imagination of an adult human similarly engages and concentrates, phenomena that will be considered beyond belief, or acceptance, by readers who do not realize of what common occurrence they are, develop. We have had stories of series of accidents, and perhaps my suspicion that they were not mere coincidences has been regarded at least tolerantly. I have data of three automobile accidents that occurred at times not far apart, and, as to the series, I note a seeming association with minor attacks upon other automobiles, and upon people, that suggests the doings of one criminal. If so, he will have to be called a cult, whether we take readily to, or are much repelled by, that term. Upon the night of April 9, 1927, Alexander Nemko and Pearl Devon were motoring through Hyde Park, London, when their car dashed down an incline, and plunged into the Serpentine. The car sank in 15 feet of water. Though terrified and drowning, Nemko had his wits with him, so that he opened the door of the car, and dragged his companion to the surface, and, with her, swam ashore. There was nothing in the lay of the land by which to explain. The newspapers noted that there had never been an accident here before. The steering gear apparently failed, was Nemko's attempt to explain. Perhaps it is queer that right at this point, so near a body of water, the steering gear failed, but, considered by itself, as mysteries usually are considered, there is little that can be said against Nemco's way of explaining. Two nights later, a taxicab plunged into the Thames, at Walton. The passenger swam ashore, but the driver was, it seems, drowned. His body was dredged for but was not found. The passenger, who must have been jostled past having any clear remembrance of what occurred, explained that, at the brink of the river, the rear wheels of the car had dropped into a deep rut, and that the car had jolted into the river. Upon May 3 RDC the London Evening Standard, May 6 William Varance and Beatrice Vills, of Leenom Road, Clapham, London, were driving near Tunbridge Wells, when the car suddenly plunged toward a hedge, at the left of the road. Varance succeeded in forcing the car to the right. Again something drove it toward the hedge. Varance was powerless to stop it, and it broke through the hedge, overturning, killing the girl. A schoolgirl, Beryl de Meza, was shot by somebody unknown and unseen, while playing in the street, near her home, at Hampstead, London. At Sheffield, there was an occurrence that was atrocious, but that may not be uncanny, but that attracts my attention because of the fiendishness of something else with which it associates. At the Soho Grinding Works, it was found, morning of April 29, that grinding wheels had been chipped, and that belting had been stripped from pulleys. Nails had been driven, points upward, in chairs upon which the grinders sat. Tools had been thrown into motors, and currents had been turned on, causing much damage. All this looks like sabotage, malicious but scarcely fiendish, but in a building next door there had been doings that are so describable. Chickens had been tortured, combs cut off, legs broken, the head of one burned, others mutilated, and their injuries smeared with white paint. London Evening Standard, May 5 Mystery of Four Shooting Affairs. A boy, playing in Mitcham Park, London, was shot in the head, by an air gun, it was thought, though no air gun pellet was found. At Tooting Bec Common, an air gun pellet, though it was not said that an air gun pellet was found, passed through the windshield of a motor car. In Stamford two men were shot by an unknown assailant. London Sunday Express, May 8 Mr. George Burlam, of Leonsea, motoring on the road from London to Southend he heard a report, and his windshield was splintered. In accounts of the punctured windshield, at Tooting Bec Common, the driver of the car was quoted as saying that he had heard a report, and at the same time a laugh, though nobody was about, at the time. Wounds have appeared upon people. Usually the explanation is that they were stabbed. Objects have been mutilated. Window panes and automobile windshields have been pierced, as if by bullets, but by bullets that could not be found. Such were the doings of the Phantom Sniper of Camden, NJ. He appeared first, in November, 1927, but the first clipping that I have, relating to him, is from the New York Evening Post, January 26, 1928, a store window pierced by a bullet, the eighth reported occurrence. Later, the stories were definitely of a phantom sniper and his phantom bullets. New York Herald Tribune, February 9, 1928, Collingswood, NJ, February 8, the phantom sniper, if it was the work of South Jersey's mysterious marksman, scored his most sensational attack tonight when a window in the home of William T. Turnbull was shattered by what appeared to be a charge of shot. Police at first believed it an attempted assassination, but, as in all the other cases, no missile was found. Turnbull, a Philadelphia stockbroker, and a former president of the Collingswood Borough Council, who was seated near the window, reading, was spattered with glass. He said that an automobile had stopped in front of the house a few minutes before. The absence of any grains of shot added to the mystery. I have sent letters of inquiry to all persons mentioned in the various reports. I have received not one answer. It may be preferable to some readers to think that there are no such persons. Still, I note that not one of these letters was dead-lettered back to me. The attacks continued until February 28, 1928. Window panes and windshields of automobiles were pierced by something that made no report of a gun, and that was unfindable. Something, or somebody, who was unseen, caused excitement in half a dozen towns from Philadelphia to Newark. Even if I could persuade myself that I am overfanciful in my own notions, the seemingly veritable stories of the existence of a missile-less gun would be interesting. Authorities in Jersey towns, noting the range of the male factor, were especially watchful of motorists, but it is my notion that he had no need for anything on wheels in which to do his traveling. I noticed a similar range, in the doings in England, in April and May, 1927. Snipings by the Camden Phantom were the show-off, and nobody was injured by him, but a more harmful fellow operated in Boston, beginning about November 1, 1930. I think that these sportsmen, who possibly are sentimental opponents to the shooting of game birds and deer, and practice their cruelties in ways that seem to them less condemnable, divide into the unoccult, and into more imaginative fellows who have found out how to practice occultly. In Boston, a noiseless weapon was used, but, this time, in 2 weeks, two men and a woman were seriously injured, and bullets of small caliber were removed from their wounds. These attacks so alarmed people that policemen, armed with riot guns, lined the roads south of Boston, with orders to catch the silent sniper. The attacks continued until about the middle of February, 1931. Nobody was caught.